Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Welcome. Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. Welcome, welcome, welcome. And this is a really interesting show for me because I have been deep in the life and work of Dario Robledo, who has a show that's opened early December at the Santa Barbara Museum of Art, and it'll run through the spring. But I have to tell you, I am super excited because he's coming on Saturday. He's flying in from Houston to give a talk about his installation. And the film that's in the exhibition as well, Ancient Beacons, Long for Notice. So let me, before we introduce Dario, let me kind of give you a sense, because I was there opening, and I'll give you a sense of what this is all about. First of all, it's not one thing. It's video, it's sculpture, it's atmosphere, it's, I don't know, many, many, many things, which kind of sums up this artist's work as well. But it's many, many, many things. And, you know, almost put me in mind of like virtual reality, because you're so, it's an immersive experience. And so what is it talking about? Well, there's a couple things. And Richard, I want you to help me with this, because like I said before we started this, this is clearly a mind meld between philosophy, aesthetics, and scientific theory. So it's a combination of many different platforms. And it was so funny because I was reading about Dario's life and work, et cetera, and a wonderful, wonderful Washington Post article that I want to talk to you about too, dear listener, when we get into the hour. But what's so interesting is I was reflecting on Galileo, and you know, they were hauling him off to prison because he was bold enough to say that, you know, the earth revolves around the sun. And they said, you know, as he's being hauled off to prison, he said, you know, the earth is still going to revolve around the sun no matter how much you say I'm wrong. And I was thinking about that. I was thinking about this long divide between the arts and the sciences that only was exacerbated more in the Enlightenment era. And with Dario's work, and you go to the museum and you'll experience the film. In Dario's work, it seems that there is no dividing line. And, you know, when we talk about this, I was thinking about a title. Your first 2008, you had a first 10-year survey exhibition. And that was titled Alloy of Love. And Richard, you know, you're going to laugh, but Richard will, he'll know what I'm talking about. You know, the use of the word alloy is so telling, because before we had the division between art and science, we had a experience called alchemy in the world, which was devoutly followed by people such as Newton. And all sorts of other very interesting figures in the British court, especially. When I was thinking about this and looking back and seeing some images from Alloy of Love, I was thinking about alchemy. I was thinking about the merging of science and the human element, the human emotion of empathy. I was thinking about how aesthetics is a... That perception is a way that the eyes look that is based on science. We understand what perception is, but we really don't. And we really don't know what this idea is about reframing reality either. Okay, so these are all the things that I want to talk with Dario about. And Richard's going to help me because, like I said, you know, one of the recurring themes that is consistent in everything I've been reading about you, Dario, is you are so interested in things outside of this planet.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And currently, you are on your artistic consultant, a very distinguished team of scientists, and you are the artistic consultant for a breakthrough message. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What is that? I'll tell you, Richard, what it is. What are we going to say to other intelligent beings that are not Earthlings when we find them? We tried once before, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. And Richard, you and I are old enough to remember the Golden Record. And, you know, Carl Sagan and his girlfriend working on the Golden Record in 1977. I was in, gosh, was I just, I don't really, can't remember how old I was, but I was old enough to be fascinated by it. And I was old enough to think that it was so cool that a female was part of it in those days. You know, you remember that, Richard?
I do. I absolutely do remember that. And I'm still waiting for my 8-track version of the Golden Record.
Yeah, right. We had those great big clunky 8-track things. My. Yeah, that's right. And we could plug it into the car stereo and that sort of thing. But yeah, so the Golden Record was an artistic collaboration and a scientific collaboration. And of course, it we all know it went up. And is still up there, and it is still, you know, waiting to be discovered. And it has things as varied as music and heartbeats and, I don't know, everything else. But what it doesn't have on it, tellingly, is something I want to start this interview with. Mario discovered, and it became the narrative structure for the exhibition here. He discovered that there was a long-lost recording, Richard, a recording, mm-hmm. Made in 1918 of warfare. That's the first time in history that a battle was recorded in 1918, which we're talking First World War. And that was under consideration to be sent up alongside, you know, when the Voyager 1 and 2 were going off. That was considered, but it was left out.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think appropriately so. I'm sorry.
Well, except if you're going to, so all right, but I mean, I see the argument pro and con, but the issue is if you're going to, and interesting enough, the sound guy that recorded that died of influenza shortly thereafter.
Oh.
Yeah. So, all right. So now, Mario, Dario, tell me the inspiration. Now you're thinking of what's on the Golden Record, why that was important, why it was chosen, and you discover that the first recording of the human urge to wreck everything is missing. Where here's my argument, Richard. If we are trying to describe to other sentient beings who are equally or greater intelligence that who we are, to leave something out as seminal to the human experience as battle seems to me to be misguided. Now, Mario, Dario, please take it from there. Tell me what this discovery meant to you.
Sure. Well, thank you. That's a wonderful setup. Yes, and just the only thing I would add is to build off what you said, there was music, there's language, there are 118 images. It was the first time they were able to figure out how to embed images in an analog, long playing record. And it's a beautiful document. And as an artist who's, you know, studied it for many years now, I think they succeeded in many, many great, great ways, even though they had, of course, the problem of, you know, who should be in charge of representing the Earth forever and to other beings. That's quite a task. But setting that aside, you know, who should, which is an important question, I've just studied, you know, what did make it on board and why. And so for many years I've been exploring that, and so much so that this is, I've made three films about it. I'm writing my first book, which will be a summation of all these big ideas. And to build off where you just left off, though, this is sort of, for me, what I hope I can contribute to new scholarship about the Golden Record. Many people have weighed in and thought about it over the years. And one of my arguments as an artist, though, is that I don't think you can truly understand what the Golden Record is unless you bring it over into the arts and start to think about it in that way. And one of my stronger claims is I think it's the greatest work of art that art history has never accounted for. And further, I think Andrian, the woman you mentioned, I think she's our greatest avant-garde feminist artist that art history has never accounted for, and that nobody knows about, let alone would give her that distinction. Now, once you make that claim, you gotta back it up, and I have many ways to do so. But one of them is, and this relates to Anne, is that in the very peculiar and perhaps once, not once in a generation, but maybe once in a species lifetime, that a group of people are given the opportunity to send an object past the gravitational pull of the sun to drift forever into space. I mean, that alone is a rarity, but maybe we're never going to do it again. That's how rare it is. And you are on the team to put together the final sort of will and testament of your species and the history of the planet. Now, I'm so curious to hear Richard's argument in a second about why he thinks it was a good decision not to put that on board, because, I have my own opinion and I'd love to think it out with you, but here's how I would frame it first, which is, if you are one of the people to get given this task of the final document of your planet, the final act of history telling, that's not to your own species, but to unknown beings, at a cosmic timeline that likely dwarfs the actual existence of your planet. My question is, does that change the moral or ethical standards by which you do the story, the history telling? And an argument, I think a strong one could be made, is if it's forever for everyone and at the cosmic level, then do we not have a moral obligation for a complete accounting of what we were capable of? That complete accounting, of course, would mean things like we knew how to undermine our own flourishing. We knew how to harm each other. We knew we didn't figure out poverty. We didn't know how to prevent the environmental destruction of the planet, etc. Along with, we also are creatures who know how to love. We know how to empathize. We value altruistic behavior, etc. So that's sort of what my project is about, is that when this team was confronted with this particular problem, what is history telling off planet and forever, as opposed to what that might mean generationally on your own planet, Andrian was the one who forced the question about, should we not account for everything? She was the one who thought about that World War I recording as a possible candidate to include. Now, to be fair to Carl Sagan and the others, they had good reasons why they ultimately had to come down hard on this best face forward approach to the record, which I have much to say about, but for the sake of time, we'll move on. But the point is that I wanted to make a film that argues, what is the most important recording that didn't make it onto the Golden Record?
Right.
And it's so important, I would argue, that recording that even fellow humans have forgotten about, that recording shaped the philosophical direction of the Golden Record, which is now past the edge of the solar system. And it's quite consequential, of course, if it's ever found. And so I wanted to give justice to the recorder. His name's Will Gaisberg. And Anne's deliberations about including it or not. And I feel that's as an important work of scholarship to telling the story of the Golden Record as it is you know, us discussing if they chose the right Chuck Berry song or not, which I think they did. But we can have other types of debates on what made it on board. But I want to talk about what didn't make it on board and why.
I want to bring the first of all, Richard, I want you to respond, but I also one of the most important things, you know, I reading as much as I could about Dario for the last couple of days, and my thought is, you know, so I'm trained and I have a master's and doctorate is in history as in different flavors of history, but one of the my really important seminal professors made me write my master's thesis over 13 times because he wanted to hammer home to me that there's 13 different versions of a narrative, of a way to tell. And so what he would do, Dario, is he'd say, okay, write it with a Marxist perspective, write it with the feminist perspective. You know, he kept on pushing different containers for historical accuracy. And at the end of the day, his question to me was, how can a historian or a poet tell an honest story? Does it even exist? You know, and so, but anyway, Richard, that's something I wanted to talk with Dario about, but I want Richard to talk about why his first gut reaction was, thank God we didn't include. I mean, it's not all, what do you call it? We've got famine, we've got war, we have disease, we have all these are part of the human experience, but not to include battle, you know, when it was okay. Richard, you go ahead.
Well, obviously, my first reaction was, oh, I'm sure glad they didn't put that in there, but being more philosophical about it, especially from my perspective as a metaphysician, it is absolutely appropriate to include it for the very reason that unless we are honest with ourselves as human beings to one another that we have a dark side, and that definitely, that sound is definitely a dark side, then how in the world will we ever be able to relate to other beings from other parts of the universe in that respect? What, you know, it's, and the bottom line is we couldn't hide it anyway. One of the interesting things about that was asked of a physicist by the name of Neil deGrasse Tyson. He says, if there were to be a television program that you would broadcast to, we'll call them extraterrestrials, non-Earthlings, what would it be? Without hesitation, he said, the Olympics. Because
is that right?
Yeah, because in the Olympics, the programming that you would see on television, you are seeing all many of the nation's peoples getting together to compete. And yet, and the last Summer Olympics is a prime example of this, show the greatest what we call sportsmanship. And the one case in point that comes to mind is this one gal, gymnast. She was, I believe she was on the balance beam. And she was up there. She was doing her routine flawless. And they gave her less than a 10. And, of course, the coach went over and said, what are you doing? It was flawless. Why isn't... Oh, because her bra strap was showing. If you can believe that. So... Now, remember, you have other countries that are competing for the gold and the silver and the bronze. Guess what they did, the other gals? They pulled their bra straps out, too. And then they went to perform. So they still competed, but they showed solidarity. And one other example was this one gal who she missed the gold and the silver, but got the bronze. But the two gals that got the gold and the silver, when they were up on the podium, they brought her up to their level and went down to the lower levels. And I can't remember if they bowed to her, but they showed her a kind of respect because they knew, because they'd been doing it, how hard she had worked. So I could certainly agree with Neil deGrasse Tyson on that. I can go further on the aspects of including those sounds and others, but Elizabeth, it's we need to take a quick break.
Okay, so I want to hear Dario's response to how can a historian slash poet slash narrative teller of narrative tales, such as an artist, how can that being tell an honest story? And then the second thing I want to ask Dario about is, so if we talk about the golden record now, Richard, I looked this up. It's over 16 billion miles from Earth right now.
That's a long extension cord.
It's 16. Now, when you so picture that image. You know, Richard and I are old enough to I was forced to witness because my mom pulled me in, and I remember the TV set on the wire stands, and we watched the moonwalk. All of us kids. And I remember being petrified, scared that poor guy was going to be lonely for the rest of his life out there in the cold blackness if we didn't, you know, do our thing right. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, having seen the exhibition, Dario, looking at the, especially that your sculpture of the whale pods, you know, the idea of something that bears a message floating endlessly, seamlessly in cold and dark. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is no other metaphor for loneliness that's more powerful, my mind.
Yeah.
So I don't know how those two things interweave for me, honesty and loneliness. I don't know how they interweave. Maybe Dario can. All right. What Richard's saying, we got to go to a quick break, and then Dario will answer some important human questions when we get back from the break, I'm sure. So don't turn that down. Back in a minute. So when all great things are said, as everybody knows, who's friends of Richard and myself, that basically Richard always asks the most important question at the break. And so Richard asks a question. So before we launch philosophical, I want Richard to ask Dario the question you just asked.
Yeah, I wanted to know if there's a place where we can go to get a copy of this golden disc, maybe not in the gold format. But maybe on cassette or CD, or if it's available online to listen to.
It is the quick historical point, but you know, when it launched, most people didn't know what had made it on board, if they knew what the golden record was at all. And it wasn't until 1991, 92 that a CD version finally was released to the public. Fast forward to, I'm going to get my year wrong, but it was within the past 5 years, an ambitious group of people finally pressed it to vinyl, you know, but that was, you know, within the past 5 years, so people could actually have the vinyl version of it. And finally, JPL does maintain a website that people can at least see the contents. There's not a link to every sound and image for copyright reasons, but you can at least know what made it on board and search it out for yourself if you like.
Very cool. Very cool.
You know what? I was mentioning, Richard, and I'm gonna forward you a link to the Washington Post article about Dario and the work that he's. And if you look, Richard, this is, I've just seen a 21st century artistic masterpiece, a new film by Dario Robledo. Because you have to realize that the M. Carter in Fort Worth and our museum here in Santa Barbara co-sponsored the show that's up at the museum, which you must see, Richard. It says a new film by Dario Robledo on view in Fort Worth, which is, of course, on view in Santa Barbara, unites art and astronomy to jaw-dropping effect. And so it's a beautifully written review by Sebastian Smee. when, of course, the show was open in Fort Worth. And so I want to ask about this question that I was putting to Dario, that how do we tell an honest story? And that's basically at the, you know, how do we communicate an honest story about who we are? Does it take a multi-platform approach to tell an honest story? I mean,
you're right. And your beautiful example about your professor asking you to write it 13 times is fascinating point, and gets to the heart of what you're saying about, you know, the most philosophical thing maybe we could ever ask is what is truth? And time and people, many different eras and people have been pondering that. It's a game I like to play, and I want to answer you the best I can in my own, lifetime of wondering about this question. But a fun game I like to play sometimes is any question I can possibly ask myself, which, and I mean more philosophical and intelligent-like questions, I will often add at the end of it, off planet. And I just like to see what happens. Like, whatever it is I want to ask, we're just so used to rooting it back down onto Earth and to fellow humans for obvious reasons, we should. But my point is, what happens if you ask those same questions off planet? And does anything interesting happen? Do you find some different pathway to answer it? So let's ask you, what is truth off planet? What is truth a billion years from now to beings that we have yet to confirm even exist?
Right.
And if they do, we can assume no shared sensory experience, no shared cognitive development, et cetera. The problems of the Golden Record succeeding on its own terms are infinitesimally small. There are so many reasons why this shouldn't work. And I barely scratched the surface as to why. But my point is, they did it anyway. And I find that so interesting because it's a way of asking, you know, what is the value of human memory off planet? And because as soon as you ask off planet, you've entered all of those unknowns that I just listed, all unknowns that, you know, we have the luxury of knowing back on planet Earth. Like, we understand that history is a multi-generational process. Each generation can debate on their new terms and new variables. What is truth? Always, you know, science itself is always saying, you know, truth is a provisional matter. There's always more to learn. But I back all those things. I've devoted my life to them myself. But I'm going to try to tie this to your earlier intro about the division between art and science.
Yeah.
And then another way of asking this is, you know, what is poetic truth as opposed to scientific truth?
Yeah.
What is the tension between them, if any? Are those tensions fruitful, or do they, you know, counteract each other in ways that, you know, undermine the validity? And that's another reason why I argue to understand the Golden Record, you have to bring your questions of poetic truth and scientific truth to the discussion. Because is it true that, you know, there's a beautiful sound of a cricket on board? Is it true that crickets exist? Is it true that they sound that way? In some just matter-of-fact way, yes, that's true. But, you know, there aren't any sounds of lizards on board, and there aren't any condors on board. Is that less truthful because they weren't included? You know, so it's a human endeavor which is filled with problems of completion and accuracy. But, you know, back to our point about the World War One recording, I think the place they stumbled the most on the truth point was not including the broader range of human behavior. And I'm not trying to sidestep, but there's a maybe a difference between truth as an act of inclusion, like just put as many examples on board as we can, these are factual things that happen, or truth at the level of interpretation of
right
of we've moved into the process of meaning, you know, rather than just fact telling. And I think what Anne was after was both. She was, it's truthful that humans are capable of harming each other. And it's truthful that humans are beings that search for meaning in our actions. And falling in love is as much this part of the story of humanity as our acts of war. So in that sense, I feel the Golden Record is, I don't want to say it's untruthful as like a willful act of, you know, in this day and age we live in, that's such a more loaded act of willful omission or shutting of other voices. And I don't think that's what happened. But I do think we have an opportunity to talk about it. And in our own way, the Golden Record team, you know, sent that for creatures and beings they didn't know exist. But one of my favorite anecdotes about the Golden Record is that a colleague of Carl Sagan said that, you know, the odds of aliens finding it are probably zero, but the odds of future humans finding it is 100%. And I am part of the future humans, one of the future humans that found it, as we all are today talking about it. And we're doing the work of interpretation and truth-telling right now. And that's what I value, is that I want to be an active member of inching the Golden Record towards a place of truthfulness, even though it left the planet nearly 50 years ago and is, you know, entering interstellar space. The story is still being written and told. And, you know, maybe we're on the 13th version, as your professor asked you to do. But I want to be part of that. And so I guess my long way of saying is that I don't know what truth is any more than our best philosophers do, but I know it's a provisional act that requires participation from both the arts and sciences, if we're going to get a broader accounting of what it is. And so I'm trying to interject the artistic effort at inching towards a truthfulness in interpretation.
So just very quickly, just if you're tuning in just now and you're wondering what we're talking about, we're talking about an artist, Dario Robledo's, you know, flipping the paradigm on science and art amalgamation here, just as was flipped back in 1977 when our great narrator of the scientific experience, Carl Sagan, was put in charge of this ambitious project, an archive of life on Earth called the Golden Record. So it was an actual golden long-playing record, like turntable kind of record, the kind that Richard used to have. And this was conceived of by Carl Sagan, who devoted, you know, much of his life to thinking about extraterrestrial possibilities. But the creative director was Anne Drunyan, and she is currently in her 70s, I believe, who later became Sagan's wife, Richard. And so there's this whole love story thing going on through the Golden Record in a way. And you are absolutely right, Richard, in that basically it includes many languages, many greetings, many musical selections of all cultural stripes. Yes, crickets, frogs, thunder, rain, etc. You know, it includes many of the things that we, rockets, chimps, you know. I think there's a whale, singing whale.
Beautiful.
You know, and so all of these are up there, and they're floating around as lonely as the night is long. And, you know, it's oh, and images as well. There's images. They developed a way to capture images on a record at the time. And the fact that, you know, my question would be, Anne, that you're talking about, Dario, who is the mastermind, was she a trained artist?
She was a writer. She remains one. But she had was just about to publish her first novel at the time. She was one of the non-scientists on the team, and I think that's another wonderful insight into Carl Sagan, that even though, you know, we can say the problems of a very small team working on such an ambitious project, but he was thoughtful enough to include someone from the arts on the team. And before I forget, Elizabeth, I don't want to interrupt you on your next question, but I didn't address the loneliness point, which you just reminded me.
I know it. Let's go to a quick break. Okay. Let's go to a quick break. And then we get back from the break. I want you to address the loneliness question, because that is such a pervasive, and the use of what we used to call a palette, Griselle, all grays, blacks, beiges, whites, that you tended towards, uh-huh. That's lonely too.
Yeah.
Anyway, don't turn that dial back in a minute. Welcome back. You know, I begged the Santa Barbara Museum of Art to let me speak to Dario Robledo, because he's coming in to Santa Barbara from his home base in Houston to give a talk on his show on February 22nd. And if you want to find out more about that, that's the Saturday. You can go to the museum's website. You can actually, if you're a member, I think it's either free or nominal. But it's totally going to be an exciting discussion. And we were talking about the great narrative epic. I mean, classic, that's a classic word. Has a lot of different meanings in literature, but it's the epic golden record, which, I don't know, Dario, were you alive when it went up? Yeah?
Yes, I was 5 years old, 6 years old.
Okay, so you were on this planet, and we learned that the project director that was responsible for the Golden Record was Anne Drunian, and she later became Carl Sagan's wife. Who they worked together on the project, many other parts of the Voyager 1 and 2 project, and the image we were talking about, the image of this record that no one's hearing, mm-hmm. that bear is the kernel of, it's the messenger, it's the kernel, it carries the what that team thought of as the great human experience, that's hurtling through space 16 billion miles away, and it's something that wants to be heard. Mm-hmm. The image is like, it's paralytic almost.
Right. Well, it's not even, we struggle to make a metaphor, a grain of sand on the beach, a raindrop in the ocean, the Voyager and the Golden Record, that's not close as far as the scale discrepancy of the vastness that it's been launched into. And as I mentioned, the litany of problems here that further compound the loneliness, let's assume for a moment it's found, which is highly unlikely because of its tininess, but let's assume it is. The time difference between the people who sent it and the people who find, or the things that find it, will be so vast that that's a similar type of gulf that you describe. Then there are all the problems of decipherment and interpretation of across wildly different evolutionary paths, different technological developments, etc. That there are just so many reasons why this is, I would argue, the loneliest thing humans have ever made. I don't say that lightly. I'm sure other people could add to the list, but I would say this has got to be on our list. But of course, it was sent as an act of curiosity and goodwill and the desire for communication. And that with all the things we get wrong, we're still curious beings who hope for connection. And yet we had to send it into an environment that at every turn is designed to not be found. It is lost. It is deeply lost in a way that I think art, the best art, gets to, but arguably this gets even further. And
yeah, and when you say further, it's actually a true word in this regard, because it's, we were saying, 16 billion miles away from us. And Richard brought up a metaphor that I want to come back to, and that's the container of message. You know, the medium is the message, kind of thing. So we've got that famous quote, but the container in this regard is a slab of gold that's in the shape of a real record. And that's the container. Now, Richard was putting back in my mind, when I was in high school, my best girlfriend and I found an old Woolworths downtown Chicago, and it had one of those recording booths. And Richard was bringing up the vision of a lime green 45. And we have a recording. Debbie and I have a recording, which I think ours is red, of us being, you know, freshman girls together. It squeezed into this recording booth, which also had one of those cameras, you know, and it would spit out the line of, you know, I don't know how many heads, five heads, you know, while you sat there in the booth. Now let's picture that. Now Richard is a sound guy. He knows how to translate all these, you know, different kernels that hold messages. He can translate cassettes and what do you call them? Those big clunky things that went into cars, eight tracks.
He
knows how to do all that. Yeah. What if, can you picture that we never can, we've got those, but as human beings, we cannot decode the things that we've put on these. I mean, can you imagine the kind of mountain of unopened kernels that's out there that we're not going to be able to? I think of my mother and all of her home movies on those 8-tracks that she had to throw away because she couldn't even find a machine to play them anymore. So, you know, all that material, it's like, what do they call, tears in rain?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the golden record. And again, why the argument, you know, why I argue we need art to understand it is because you're teasing out that it is in its very design, it's the conditions that it now exists in. It is speaking to something deeply human, that we are creatures that understand loneliness, and we are profoundly creative in the face of loss and loneliness. And we build things, we create things, we create recording systems to try to hold on to memories for a little longer, knowing full well that even that probably has a shelf life. And so that's why what the Golden Record is doing, I mean, it's not lost on me that in 2025, you know, when I've talked about the record to teenagers, they're clueless about what a record is, let alone how to play it. And it struck me that it didn't take a billion years in aliens for the loneliness of the Golden Record to come out. It just took a few generations of humans to forget, you know, how to play a record. Let alone decipher all the content in it. So the Golden Record it's a beautiful document. It's a testament to science, it's a testament to art. But I think as you're getting at here, it's also, I would argue, a beautiful monumental effort to overcome the condition of loneliness, but with a true realism attached to it. That this just might be something we can never truly overcome, but we're going to give it our best shot no matter what.
Okay, so two questions before we have to go, because we've got like 1 minute, but I want to know, when is the heartbeat at the edge of the solar system, colon, science, emotion, and the golden record? You are writing that book as we speak.
Yes, with
when is that?
Yeah, so the co-author, Jennifer Roberts, and we're hoping for a publication in early 2026.
Okay, second question. Describe neuroaesthetics.
It is applying our latest advances brain activity, but specifically to the experience of aesthetic encounters. So it's a brand new field that I'm deeply interested in, because I would certainly love to understand what is the, you know, the neurology underpinning, you know, everything from admiring the beauty of a sunset to admiring the beauty of a Picasso. And that's fascinating to ponder at the level of at the level of the brain.
And tying that back, Dario, to loneliness, it's an interesting concept, because art is both extremely personal, so you are just locked out of any other experience in humanity's palette. It's extremely personal, and it's extremely universal at the same time. Both are lonely.
Right.
Anyway, we cannot wait to have you come back to Santa Barbara, and we are all anticipating February 22nd, where you will be lecturing at the Santa Barbara Museum of Art. And Richard and I deeply thank you, because we both get jazzed up with topics and interesting people like yourselves, and we just cannot wait to follow your career and listen to you on Saturday. Thank you, Dario, so much for being with us.
Thank you both. I appreciate it.